All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Good morning. This is Bennett Kelly. Welcome to Cyber Law and Business Report, broadcast live from the Internet Law Center here in the heart of Silicon Beach in downtown Santa Monica. Please be seated. We have a great show for you today on this Earth Day. I hope you're celebrating wisely. But we're going to talk about an important topic of data breaches. And it's a growing problem in this country, and we have a good friend and a great lawyer to talk about the consequences of data breach and what you need to do. And then we're going to end with some news updates. But let's start off with Mark Ishman. And Mark is a renowned lawyer working out of Raleigh, North Carolina. He's been practicing in this field for years, primarily in the area of internet law and data security. He is a graduate with an LLM in information technology and privacy law. I didn't even know they had that. Mark, are you with us?
I am. Good morning.
Hello, Mark.
Yes, can you hear me? Good morning.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. My headset's having a little weird problem with it today. The LLM in information technology and privacy law, that must be relatively recent.
The John Marshall Law School is the only one that offered that in the country, and that was back in 2000.
Wow, that's pretty forward. But any event, welcome to the show. And Mark, I've known Mark just through his reputation in the industry and through industry events. And we've tried a few times, but we never had the opportunity to work together. So this is kind of our first collaboration. So I'm thrilled to have you on. Tell us a little your practice since you're in Raleigh, and tell us a little about your practice first.
Sure. We've been helping clients from small, medium-sized companies to individuals and protecting their assets, and that could be their online reputation, their intellectual property, patents, trademarks, and copyrights, as well as their business in doing online transaction and litigation work for these companies. And a lot of them end up with high net worth, and we also protect their assets through various estate planning measures. But the core of our practice has always been on internet law and data security. And as you know, in today's environment, there are hundreds of thousands of breaches each day. And it's only a matter of time as to when your day will be up if you are a company making money. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when, because it's so frequent. And you are a target as soon as you start making money and have a presence on the internet.
Well, and it's not just that. You're not just a target, but the consequences are huge. I mean, I think it's like something in the order of 40 to 60% of small businesses that have data breaches don't survive more than 6 months.
And if they do, they're doing the 10-year Federal Trade Commission audit and a six-figure fine.
Right.
Typically.
Although I've talked to the FTC and they're famous for saying, well, the fact that you have a data breach does not necessarily mean that you'll get an investigation. And flip side, the fact that you haven't had a data breach does not mean you won't get an investigation. But yeah, I mean, obviously, they tend to draw the FTC's attention, unfortunately. Now, you've presented a lot on the issue of data breaches, and and so what's the first thing you tell people about data breaches in terms of what they need to know?
We need to put it down at its baseline. First, you need to understand both state and federal laws and how they apply to a data security breach, and then get into both the litigation on the private sector as well as the Federal Trade Commission and some best practices in how to deal with this. And so when you first start off here, there's no getting into the state and federal law comparison. There's no single federal or state law that governs security of all types of personal information. And you're going to be looking at both federal and state law, depending on three factors: the entity or the sector that that collected information is from, the type of that information, and the purpose for which that information was collected.
And so once you identify that, then obviously, you know, okay, we have to comply with either state or federal law. And how do they differ? What's the significance of whether you're under state or federal law?
Well, state is limited for the most part within the state borders, and it can't go beyond that. And federal law is an umbrella over all the states. And the best way to comply with it is trying to find the one state or the couple of states that have the most intensive requirements to comply with. Because if you comply with that state, then most likely you're complying with all the other states,
right?
As well as federal law.
And that's been the challenge, I think, what people are complaining about in this space is that, you know, oddly enough, this is one of the few areas where I think there's some consensus that something needs to be done, just because of what there's something like 47 different state reporting requirements, and I think California just amended theirs recently. And you know,
there's just been new federal legislation introduced, so that's coming along the lines as well.
But it never seems to get passed. I think it gets tied down with other issues. In terms of cybersecurity and privacy, that always seem to bog everything down. But And so, you know, for a business perspective, that's a troubling thing. You know, complying with 48 states and or 47, and it's not just tied to where the breach occurs, but it's where the resident the identity is. Correct.
That's true, and that's controlled by state law. So knowing which states requires that they be notified, or what other measures that apply to that particular situation. You might have a few progressive states that require biometric data, like North Carolina, and then, as you mentioned, the healthcare records out in California.
Right.
It's a big issue to tackle, and you need to make sure you have the right team to handle this.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You really are at a three-prong approach. You're going to be looking at what are our policies and procedures? Are they accurate? And then you need a plan. If we have a breach, what's our plan? What's our action plan? And does that action plan make sure that we are compliant with our state laws and federal laws that apply to the situation in our industry? And last, you need to prepare to deal with the FTC. And so those are the three prongs you really need to look at when you address data security on the corporate level.
And the other thing you need to do is you need to start thinking about this before it actually occurs. Just like any good crisis PR measures, both of those are something are better addressed when you have the opportunity to get through, rather than having to do it while people are more or less firing shots at you.
Exactly right. That's that proactive measure. And if you do not implement that proactive plan in reaction to a data security, let's say within 48 hours or 45 days, you'll be in violation of some state laws.
And so when clients come to you, how often is it before and how often is it after?
Most of the time it's after the fact. And what we're trying to push is being the proactive side of things and being proactive in doing a data security audit and making sure that what you publicly state out there is in fact what you're doing. Otherwise, that's a deceptive practice. And you need to make sure you're collecting and storing the sensitive personal information in a fair manner. If not, then that's an unfair practice to the consumer. And those are the two broad overviews that any audit should focus in on in your plan in reacting to a data security breach. Some of these state laws that are kind of interesting is notification typically is required in Florida, Ohio, and Wisconsin, require it within 45 days. All except Hawaii, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Texas, and Wisconsin require notification to affected state residents.
So and there was, there was something, I think, in California, the Attorney General actually went after, I'm trying to remember who the entity was, but for not reporting fast enough.
Correct.
It was a Citibank, I believe. I could be wrong. But, you know, so that's, you know, you're not just, as you say, you have certain timetables. And even the thing was about Californians is Californians, I believe, was not a specific date, but it's actually just timely reporting. And if you can violate something as vague as timely reporting, then that's a problem.
And that's going to deal with the size of the breach. But typically, the size of the breach is typically millions of data files of individuals. And if you're dealing with that, then you do need to act quickly. And you might be given a little bit of time if it's that size. But certainly, the states that are requiring 45-day reporting, that's a baseline as to what's a reasonable in reacting to a data security breach.
And so when you counsel clients on this, what is the toughest issue for them to kind of get their arms around?
That third day is coming.
Mark, I appreciate it. Thanks for the info. You know, I'll keep you in mind. Your card's right here. But this ain't going to happen to me. That happens to other people. That's really the tone.
But, well, we're trying to work with people on the audit side of things, because when your day comes and you're hacked, well, then it's pretty clear what needs to be done. But being on the proactive side of things, are you taking the right steps to make sure that you are complying with industry standards in storing data and collecting data? And depending on what industry you are, that's constantly evolving, and the standards vary. There's no one set of books and records that give you the standard, the industry standard. So you really need to make sure you're above and beyond that to protect yourself and your legal entity.
And just so you know, as usual, we have our background on our guests and this topic on our blog at cyberlawradio.wordpress.com, and that includes actually a presentation by Mark on this topic. So we encourage you to check that out. Now, you encourage them to be proactive. You know, audits obviously are helpful. What do you, how do you explain, and how do you get clients to agree to do audits?
Typically, it's affected by someone in their industry, and they see the exposure that they've been exposed to and have to go through at that point in time. Also, you're dealing with some federal law that puts personal liability on directors and shareholders, on directors. So that pushes them to make sure that what they're doing is best practices. Otherwise, they could be facing some personal liability.
So it definitely will get their attention. Now, you talked a little about federal law. Why don't you explain kind of the Fed? We talked about state law earlier. Let's talk about the federal framework in terms of what governs here in terms of responding to a data breach.
There's no one set law. There's many laws that come into play. There's a laundry list from the Privacy Act, Fair Information Security Information, going all the way down to HIPAA. The privacy rule, security rule, high tech, fair credit reporting, and the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, that brings the personal liability to the directors.
It's this broad, and those are often, for example, Graham-Leach-Bliley and HIPAA, those are industry specific. And, I know there's a great sensitivity to HIPAA in the medical community. Have you dealt with people in those industries, and how well or how versed have they been in some of these requirements?
Well, HIPAA absolutely has caught the attention of the industry, and everyone that we've dealt with, it's on their rider. On the radar, and they're doing everything that they can to make sure that they're HIPAA compliant at all times, and they have been. And it's an evolving process, and the more data you gather from more individuals, you know, the bigger the audit, the bigger the attention that you must put towards and making sure you're always HIPAA compliant.
And Graham-Leach-Bliley, obviously, one thing I thought was interesting about Graham-Leach-Bliley was they actually kind of address privacy policies and suggested a template that I thought was going to become the norm, and never quite did. I mean, you know, obviously some elements of what we use, but actually, you know, thought that the next step, if you had these banking and, you know, the FTC and other regulators coming and developing a template for privacy disclosures, that the FTC would then take the next step and say, okay, everyone should do this.
Well, that's tough to make a cookie sheet that fits all. And what you really need to look at are the Federal Trade Commission decisions, and they kind of pinpoint what are deceptive policies.
Right.
And if you look through their decisions, you're going to have an outline of what your policy should look like.
And you know,
no, go ahead.
No, those are important things, are making sure that you're getting those points and they're being disclosed clearly. But the most important thing is what you're saying is truthful.
Yes. Truthful, and in fact, you are doing what you say you are doing.
Right. That's what I meant by truthful. And so let me ask you this. I mean, how many times have you heard, well, can I just copy someone else's privacy policy?
Depending on how sophisticated the customer client is. The more sophisticated you are, you can't do that.
And right, but I get that a lot. I mean, people ask me, well, can I just copy someone else's policy? And you know me a little bit, so you know you won't be surprised by this, but, you know, I somewhat give somewhat of a crass remark by saying, well, would you wear their underwear too? and just to hammer home this, you know, you're both different, and you know, are you willing to own up to everything that they say they're going to do? And so I think that's the risk, is people just think, oh, the privacy policy is just something you throw up on the website and don't even have to think about it.
You're absolutely right. And that will lead to all kinds of problems on an individual or in a big exposed way by state attorney generals and Federal Trade Commission actions.
And then
employ that sort of tactic, that sort of lack of due diligence on your end.
Right. And so which kind of, I guess, you know, is the next topic, really. And we talked about the state law, we talked about the federal law, is, you know, as in most things in life, when things go wrong, there's litigation.
That's right. You're seeing all kinds of litigation out there on the data security breach. Sony Gaming Networks, that was a big lawsuit that attracted the attention. You're seeing all kinds of legal theories on these lawsuits, on the civil side, the breach of contract, negligence. As you mentioned earlier today, the state data breach notification laws, and then
right.
These federal claims.
What's the breach of contract? That there's some kind of implied contract between me, the consumer, and, you know, you, Mr. Website, that you're going to use adequate care for my data?
Absolutely. You were just mentioning about why can't I use your underwear?
Right.
Well, that privacy policy that you just copied, and you told your users, this is how we're going to handle it. Well, that's exactly what we mean by breach of contract, because you didn't realize what sort of agreement you've just made with your customers.
I'm kind of worried about that soundbite. But no, yeah, I understand. Basically, there's this reliance that, you know, your website are going to, because you're different, you're gonna do everything right.
Correct. With these...
Go ahead.
No, with the lawsuits, when they first came out, you saw all kinds of class action lawsuits. Everybody was filing them whenever you had a data security breach. And in 2013, the United States Supreme Court came down with a decision, and that's changed the universe of data security litigation. The case is Clapper, and the Supreme Court is requiring actual damages. We had all these class action lawsuits because you had, you know, 100 million credit cards compromised, or these data files were compromised. But and the fear that, hey, one day the bad guys will have my data and use it, and I'll have a loss. And Clapper said, no, you don't have standing to sue unless you have actual damages.
Which is somewhat limiting.
It is. It has limited a lot of these lawsuits. that these class action plaintiffs are bringing.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about Clapper and more after these messages. You're listening to Cyber Law and Business Report.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Biz Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Whether you are an online business or domain name investor, you need access to the best names. With over 270 million domains already registered, finding the right names at the best price requires a great wingman. Namejet.com puts you in the pilot seat by giving you fast and unparalleled access to some of the best premium and expired domain names on Earth. As the number one domain name auction platform, Namejet.com is the best place to find domains for your business or investment. So light the afterburners to the domain name aftermarket and fly over to Namejet.com at Mach speed to get great domains today. Namejet.com.
Introducing Rumble, the smart mobile management system, the first end-to-end mobile platform where you can make real-time app modifications from a point-and-click dashboard. Want to change the design of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Want to change the ad map of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Want to change the content mix of your app? Point-click, and it's live in real-time. Power your mobile business with Rumble. Are you ready to rumble? Visit www.rumble.me.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on webmasterradio.fm.
And we're back with Mark Eastman, and we're talking about data breaches and underwear, apparently. And we were just talking about the Supreme Court decision in Clapper and the limitation on the only ability to bring claims if you have actual damages. But, you know, a consumer doesn't just have damage, you know, have financial losses, but they have to spend money to now monitor their credit situation as a result. I mean, is that actionable?
Well, the Clapper decision actually addressed that, and they acknowledge that the consumer will have time and money, you know, put in to monitor their financial information. But the court still found that they lack standing because it's too speculative in the what the future event may bring based on a hypothetical future criminal act. Wow. So you need actual injuries, not just an increased risk of injury. And that was the big thing. You need actual injuries, not just an increase in the risk.
Anyway, it sounds to me like this Supreme Court never had a data breach. You know, they'd never been notified that they were part of a data breach.
Yeah, that day I'm sure is coming soon.
True.
With how these guys are coming and finding new targets to attack.
Yeah, we often talk about there was a high-end woman's shoe store that had a data breach, and they just had the misfortune of being one of their customers was the FTC chairwoman at the time. And so it very quickly led to an investigation because of it. But
bring up an interesting point, knowing your vendors, because your vendors could expose you and make you a part of a data security breach because you're only as strong as your weakest hole in your network security. And if you have business partners and vendors that are working with you, you need to make sure that not only your infrastructure is in line with what you're saying you're doing, but also your business partners and associates who have access and are a part of your infrastructure.
So right now there's this discussion about, when more than a discussion, there's actually, you know, arguments going on in court about the FTC's authority to regulate the space and to impose sanctions. for failing to have security. And we've talked a little bit about on the show in the past about the case that's now pending, I believe, in the Third Circuit, the Wyndham Hotels case.
Yes, that case is a big case for the FTC. When that was filed, Wyndham Hotels said, hey, we are the franchisor, and the franchisee are individually run and operated, so do not bring it against the franchisor. And by the way, FTC, you have no standing to bring this suit. Well, the district court, federal district court in Colorado, said, oh, you are incorrect. The FTC has all the power and authority under the Federal Trade Commission Act. And the Federal Trade Commission Act has very broad authority to investigate unfair and deceptive acts and practices in or affecting commerce. So a deceptive act would be failing to adhere to your stated policies or procedures. And unfairness is failing to provide a secure storage facility of sensitive data. And when that decision came out, later that year, Congress, at a hearing, said, you know what? Wyndham Hotel, the federal district court out there, got it absolutely correct. The FTC has all the power and authority to go and be the enforcer on data security breaches. So you see that Wyndham decision, along with the Clapper decision, and you're seeing now the FTC as the police, the policing agency, and any new class actions that come out, you're going to see very narrowly tailored and particularly drafted to plead actual damages.
And because this decision, I mean, it was very important, because if the decision went the other way, and still might, because they are appealing to the Third Circuit, if the decision goes the other way, there actually is no federal enforcement body on data security.
Correct. And, well, de facto, right now, it's a Federal Trade Commission, unless someone tells them otherwise.
Right.
And under the Federal Trade Commission Act, that is exactly what they're doing. So I'd be, with the congressional support of that initial decision, I'd be surprised if that's changed. I'll put my peg on that side.
I heard the arguments. Of course, you can't tell anything from the arguments, but that the arguments of the Third Circuit suggest that the court was struggling with the issue. I don't know if you've read any of those reports, but I think that it's not. I'm not. You can never judge by just the arguments, but it's unclear where that will end up. But hopefully, I agree. I think having the presence of the FTC is important, unless until Congress can step in. Now, what would the framework?
As a petitioner representing clients with data security breach issues or the prevention thereof, it makes more sense to have one regulatory agency with all the power, because then they'll set rules and they'll set out guidelines as to what they're looking for. Because in fact, that is what the FTC has already done in their decisions. When you look through their decisions, they tell you what's important to them and what's not. Now, more importantly, what's important to them, and by going to with one authoritative body to comply with, I think you're going to have a much more self-regulated, which is what we are, community in providing secure data security for the data we collect online.
So you have this potential exposure. For example, Target just settled a $10 million consumer claim and a $19 million claim with MasterCard arising out of their data breach. So there's huge exposure.
That Target case is a perfect example of Clapper, because they had a $10 million settlement reached in that case. But they provided a means for which each affected customer can claim $10,000. And they had to actually submit documentation of actual damages.
So is the $10 million they're contributing to that fund, if people don't submit documentation, does it, they recoup that? It goes back to Target?
There's a lower amount if you submit something that you don't meet their standard of of actual losses to their satisfaction.
So eventually it'll probably be depleted.
Correct, given the size of it. But that tells you that since Clapper, actual damages must be documented. And if not, then you lack standing and you won't be in line for a class action settlement.
Well, so I have a business and I call you and I say, you know, wow, this, you know, $29 million, that's a lot to shell out. And you're telling me I will have this happen to me sometime, probably in the next 2-3 years. Is there any way I can insure against this?
Yes. In today's world, there are all the major insurance companies are providing cyber liability insurance.
Now, I've talked to insurers. We've actually had some on the show. And in the past, you know, they said, one of the problems in this space is insurance is based on one thing, and that's histories. So they use histories, they use that data to come up with an assessment of risk and then price accordingly. And they said early on, there was no history with the internet. So everything was extremely expensive. Now we're starting to get histories. And so how has the pricing of the product changed and what exactly does it cover?
Depending on what industry you're in, your prices will dramatically vary. So if you're in a online retailer, that is going to be a highly priced policy. And some insurers may not insure you because you're in a high-risk industry, while others will, depending on, again, what your industry is. And the history, as you mentioned, will dictate that price of that policy.
And go ahead. So I that dictates the price. And but what is it covering? And what are the limitations? You know, for example, do I only get coverage if I'm found to have had some kind of proactive plan, or you know, can a company that is kind of a late to the game really get coverage?
Well, the proactive plan will help you with an FTC enforcement action, that you're being diligent, addressing your network security and being proactive about it. Right now, I am not aware of any plan that will have a lower premium based on audit. Are you aware of any?
I'm not aware. I mean, I haven't, it's been a while since I've really delved into this, but you would think that would be, you know, for example, if I'm the carriers, I want you to do that and I would incentivize that.
Yes. And to my knowledge, none of these carriers have actually cut a check for anyone for audit practices. But you know what? I think that day is coming. Generally speaking, the cyber liability insurance platform is new. It's something that's just come around the last 3 to 4 years, 5 years. And so it's unlike traditional fire and water policies and general liability. This is something that I think will evolve. And as you're seeing the cost to responding to a data security without an audit and the cost of responding to a data security breach where the party actually did conduct an audit, respond quickly and efficiently and minimize their exposure, they'll see the benefit. And that will be something I look forward to in seeing that sort of policy and those sort of audit procedures being covered under a policy like that.
And one thing that it's unclear, and it'd be interesting to see if there's any data. We keep hearing data about the amount of data breaches that are happening, and that's ongoing. Obviously the chart just keeps going up. And we hear about, okay, there's now an increased availability of cyber insurance. What would be interesting to see is the amount of cyber insurance payouts for data breaches. Because we don't know if any of the ones we're seeing in the newspaper are actually covered. Because I think once those payouts start happening, I think you might see more actions like what you suggested, you know, with the insurance company saying or requiring some kind of audit on a certain, you know, basis, you know, in order to, or incentivizing it at least, in order to minimize their own exposure.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I think you're going to see these distinctions also in the Federal Trade Commission complaints and final decisions, in which they were had a you know, the last thing you want is a Federal Trade Commission inside your business for 10 years and a 6-7 figure fine.
But they're such nice people.
And they have clean underwear. But anyway, no, but the last thing you do want is that. But they will provide, they will give you a benefit and for being proactive and responding quickly and efficiently. When you don't do those things and you don't comply with your policies and your network is not as secure as you state it is, then they'll come down on you very, very hard. So you're going to see at that end, and you're going to see you know, the private class action settlements like you just
right.
target. I think when you start comparing the big high-profile cases that where one party has done these proactive measures and let it be known as part of the discovery in the matter, you're going to see that, hey, it may make sense. We should give a discount. We should cover it, especially in they're in a high-risk industry where they have lots of incidences of collecting data. The more times they're collecting data, the more opportunities there are to some sort of network security breach.
And, you know, it seems to me that there is no – I think to have a market capability to respond – there is no market incentive, you know, vis-a-vis the consumer. I don't think, you know, Joe consumer goes to Target or goes to Best Buy or wherever based on their data security. I think there's some short-term drop-off after a breach, but I don't see that really being something that consumers calculate in their decision-making. But I do see a market-based incentive where there could be insurance discounts or, you know, there are fines for failing to respond adequately. You know, I think that's where you create a market incentive for cybersecurity.
I go with you there. I also go with you a little different on the healthcare side of things. You're
really?
Seeing exposures on the healthcare side of things. If you, would you go to a physician if they've had network security breaches?
I mean,
with your sense of healthcare.
How do you know? How do you know? And that's the thing. I'm going to a new eye doctor next Monday. And I know nothing about their history. I mean, I guess I could look it up under Yelp to see if they had a data breach, but I haven't. Do you do that before you go to a doctor?
I don't. Should we?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, seriously, you raise a good point. Should we? And actually, you know, this is supposedly, you know, this is supposed to be the year of the medical data breach. You know, then when the Anthem breach happened, they said that, you know, right now this it's just that is a huge target because it is so rich for identity thieves because of all the information that's there.
It's scary. It is scary. And I think it'd be as we progress and we become more knowledgeable, we know what we should be doing as a company and we have a network security breach, that black eye may be harder to cure as we go on if you're not doing the right thing.
Okay, we're going to take a short break in a second, but very, very quickly though, if Anthem or Target has a data breach, that's huge news. But you know, if local Joe dentist does it, who hears about it? And so how can that have an impact? We're going to take a short break. We'll be back and with Mark and some news updates, and we'll be back after these messages. You're listening to the Cyber Law and Business Report.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Creating a website is not an easy task, and there are so many companies to choose from.
How do I know which one is best?
It's a big jump making your site mobile-friendly, generating sales, and answering questions with no struggles. If you want to come out on top, you need Frog on Top. At Frog on Top, we take the time to make your site generate money, not just look good. Our team of experts are WordPress savvy, and our customer service is leaps ahead. See why we say our websites are designed better by leaps and bounds by going to frogontop.com. Frog on Top, your one-stop solution for the web. Frogontop.com.
When you started your business, you first listened to your professors. Now that your business is growing and gaining ground, you only seek out professionals. PPC Professionals, an industry leader for highly optimized search marketing campaigns with over 30 years of combined management experience. Our professional approach to every campaign helps you find every avenue of revenue so that you can not only stay ahead of your competitors, but get a return on your investment and increase your bottom line. PPC Professionals, personal, professional, PPC services, ppcprofessionals.com.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan to talk to you about Bruce Clay Incorporated. They've made Inc. Magazine's list of growing private businesses and have exhibited and sponsored at my conferences since the very beginning. You've seen their search engine relationship chart or you've read their SEO code of ethics, so you know they're SEO experts. But did you know they can help you with PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding? Yep, get everything you need for success in the online marketplace. You can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years with offices worldwide, they've got the answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
We're back. This is Bennett Kelly with the Internet Law Center. We're talking to Mark Ishman about data breaches, and he's quite an authority on it. Again, remind you to check out our blog post at cyberlawradio.wordpress.com. There's some details on Mark and how you can find him, and well as the presentation on this topic. And so, Mark, I really enjoyed our discussion. If people want to learn more about you or your practice, or if you have anything that's coming up that you want to alert people to, why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. Please head over to ishmanlaw.com, ishmanlaw.com. You'll find all the information you need to know about our firm and myself. Also, we offer a free initial 15-minute telephone consultations on data security breaches. So if you are one that has an issue on that end, either as a business or individual, 919-468-3266, 919-468-3266.
Not 919, deep do. They need a good acronym for a data breach type of television commercial. But I want to thank you very much. It's always a pleasure, and so I do encourage people. He's a great lawyer and a good friend. So glad to have you on, and hope you'll consider coming back sometime. But this is a very important issue, and I think you've done a great job explaining it to everyone.
Thank you so much. There's so much to cover. And again, this is just a broad overview, and hopefully you saw the issues that are involved in this ongoing matter.
Thanks again, Mark. We're going to do just some quick updates. There's some of the news that's going on. Just so you know, there's the latest edition of Cyber Report, the newsletter for the Internet Law Center, went out on Monday, and it's available on our website. The 12 things that you need to know right now that's going on. And we have that. Encourage you to check that out on our blog, which is ilccyberreport.wordpress.com. Definitely check that out. It has a lot of information that would be relevant to you. Also want to let you know that Twitter has made some changes to its area in terms of how it deals with abuse and abusers. We have a link to an article there. And we've had a lot of talk about some of the gender issues going on right now in Silicon Valley. And one of the prime abusers and poster childs of what's wrong in Silicon Valley has been a gentleman named Gurbash Chahal, who was at Radium 1 and actually got forced out there after he was charged with assaulting his girlfriend, and a security video was released that showed him hitting her over 100 times about in a 20-minute period, I believe, something like that. Any event, he was forced out, and he started a new company called Gravity 4, and surprise, surprise, there's a lawsuit there alleging gender discrimination and abuse there as well. So karma seems to have found him once again. But that's definitely just continuing, the kind of focus of what seems to be a serious problem in Silicon Valley, despite the outcome of the Ellen Powell verdict. Secondly, I want to give a shout out. There's an interesting article today in the Hill, which is a newspaper for on Capitol Hill, covers all things going on in Capitol Hill, and it names the number one tech lobbyist in America today. And I'm sure you're trying to guess who it might be or who they're affiliated with. And I'll tell you what, they're not affiliated with Google, Microsoft, or Facebook, but HBO. And it's John Oliver. And he hit another home run last week with his segment on copyright, on patent trolls. And it was just a brilliant thing. As you may recall, his segment on the net neutrality and criticizing or having reservations about whether FCC Chairman Wheeler would go full throttle on that issue led to a huge response that actually crashed the FCC's email server. So he's really taking on some interesting issues that are definitely germane to tech. And so he's developed quite a reputation. And hats off to John Oliver once again, hitting the long ball on that issue. A couple other things we want to highlight. I will be flying to San Francisco today, and we'll be arguing in the Court of Appeal a case on a spam case, and to what extent the issue we were able to dismiss the case. And now it's on appeal, and whether or not it was properly dismissed, and whether or not when cases get dismissed, the judge has an option to give the other party leave to amend, to take another whack at it. But here the other party had not really shown any ability to really state a claim that was cognizable under the California Spam Act. So we're going to be arguing not just that issue about whether or not it was proper to, one, dismiss it and not grant leave, but we've also put on the table the issue of whether or not the California Spam Act is preempted. And so far, no case, California case has gone that far. So it'll be an interesting argument tomorrow in the Court of Appeal in San Francisco, heading up there for that. And we'll definitely keep you updated on how that goes. I mentioned at the top of the show today is Earth Day. Tomorrow is a day of great significance. It is the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide. And so we now have had a century of genocide. And, I mentioned in a blog post recently that, I grew up in the post-World War II era. My dad was in World War II. And, we taught in school about the Holocaust. And, it never was just taught in separate from anything else. You always heard, you talked about it, and then we would say, never again. This is, we have a new world order, we have the UN, we have all these institutions, and just the will, we're not going to allow this to happen again. And then, you had the year zero and the killing fields in Cambodia, but, what could we do? We had just pulled out of Vietnam, so we put that aside. But then we have Bosnia, and, you have what happened in Srebrenica. And Srebrenica, and then you have Rwanda, where we kind of tried to parse words about whether or not genocide was occurring. And, never again doesn't seem quite so much never again. And then here you see the Obama administration even being reluctant to even acknowledge that this is the 100th anniversary of a genocide. And, I think what allows genocide to happen isn't just prejudice or bigotry towards an ethnic group or a religion. What allows it to, happen and continue to repeat itself is really a lack of courage to stand up to it. And unfortunately, we haven't done that this time on the 100th anniversary. And I wholeheartedly agree with my friend Paul Gregorian, who's one of the more distinguished Armenian-American politicians here in California, in condemning the administration on that. And but, you know, it's an important day to commemorate. Next week, we will be talking about an important issue. Actually, we had to reschedule because the trial schedule, but we're going to be talking about domain theft. And that is a growing issue. David Weslow, he's a Washington lawyer. He's going to be talking to us about that. And because certain domains are, especially three-letter and four-letter domains, which can be easily used as acronyms for practically any business, there's been a growing wave of them being more or less using phishing or hacking campaigns to get into those accounts and transfer them unwittingly without the owner's knowledge to a different registrar in China and then selling them. I know David has brought a couple of cases to reclaim the domains by using a procedure, not by suing the actual party, but by suing the domain itself. It's a concept in law known as in rem, where you sue the property, not the person. And he's had a couple of cases on that. He's going to talk about this development. And it should be an interesting discussion because it is a problem. And we'll be dealing with that next week. And it really is something that we need to address. And but we'll talk about how effective that remedy that is. And so in terms of other news, I do encourage you again to check out the Cyber Report. We cover a broad range of all the latest news, and the newsletter has won an LA Press Club Award a couple of years ago for being the best corporate newsletter out there. So do encourage you to check it out again on our blog. And check out our website, check out our website, internetlawcenter.net. And Internet Law Center, we do, like Mark, we do a lot of internet law. And in a variety of areas, we have a specialty in online advertising, and also we do a lot of work with victims of cyber harassment. So please check us out. So I want to thank Mark again. Mark is a good friend and a standout guy and a great lawyer. And so it's been a pleasure to talk to him. So we'll hope you will join us again. I'll be talking with David Weslow about domain theft next week. This is Bennett Kelly saying happy Earth Day. Thank you for joining us. Court is adjourned. We will see you next week on Cyber Law and Business Report right here on webmasterradio.fm. Be sure to listen to our on the blog channels as well and give us your feedback. You can send us a Twitter at Cyber Law Radio. Love to hear what you think. All the best to you. Bye-bye.
This has been a presentation of WebmasterRadio.fm, the world's largest business-to-business radio and podcast network. We welcome you to sample past episodes of this program, as well as our complete library of programs, on demand or on the air via our 24/7 live audio stream at www.webmasterradio.fm. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.